This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. It's February 19th, 2020. Welcome to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show and you're listening live, you can call us right now at 860-486-9487, or you can email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. If you're listening to this on podcast, you can send an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com, or you can visit and comment at Bicycle Talk on Facebook. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org, iTunes, or now on Spotify. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. Starting it off, Ron's rant of the week. This was shared to me by a friend of the show, and it's kind of a funny little thing because how many times have you received advice from people who drive motorized vehicles? Maybe you're at a family function, and it might be a cousin of yours that gives you advice about how, you know, you guys are in my way all the time when I'm driving my behemoth down the road. They don't refer to it that way, but I've had that happen to me. Or you get, maybe you have a conversation, maybe in business or whatever it is, wherever you are, maybe it's at work, and you say something about riding your bicycle, and someone just rants off about how, you know, people who they just rant off, basically. So one of the big ones is that people, and this is friends, family members, etc., coworkers, they tell you how dangerous bicycling is, riding your bicycle is. So instead of telling someone who rides a bicycle how dangerous it is, look twice before you switch lanes, making turns, or pulling out of driveways. Stay on your own side of the road. Don't follow too closely. Be patient when waiting to pass. Patient, that's a word that is not in the American diet. The few seconds that you wait can actually save someone's life. Keep your eyes on the road and off your cell phone. Well, that's a no-brainer. I forgot to tell you this, Fran, when I was driving home yesterday, returning back from my meeting, I saw lots of fire trucks.
And were you at a meeting?
Yes, I was yesterday.
What kind of meeting?
It was a meeting with Rich yesterday.
Oh, yeah. That's nice. Hi, Rich.
And anyway, he's probably not listening, but that's okay.
But he can listen on podcasts on Spotify or iTunes or WHUS.org.
It's all true. It could always happen. You never know. So, this is the keep your eyes on the road and off of your cell phone. As I was driving home, there were police cars and fire trucks and everything, and there was a pickup truck that was nose down off the road into a tree.
Oh, where was this?
Right below our house, right down the bottom of the hill. Yeah.
On Bassett's Bridge Road.
Yeah, on Bassett's Bridge Road. No. Yep. So that's what can happen if you don't keep your eyes on the road and you're just looking at your cell phone. I'm just assuming that this was a cell phone incident, as it was a straight section of road and there was no reason for this vehicle to be pointed off the pavement.
But so was this going towards 195 or going towards 6?
It appeared that the truck was probably pointing in the direction towards Route 6, but it's kind of hard to tell because
but from our house.
From our house, I was coming in from Route 195.
So you passed it on the way to, okay,
right.
Wow.
Right.
And it was on a straightaway.
Yeah. Yeah, right after Kaya Lane coming up the hill.
Oh. Yeah.
So anyway, so keep your eyes on the road and off your cell phone instead of telling us how dangerous it is. Stop texting while driving. This is truly life or death. If you care about someone who is a cyclist, please repost this. So I posted this on my Facebook Bicycle Talk page, and you will see it, and it shows a drawing of a gentleman in a red jersey on his bicycle. It looks like he's on some sort of a bridge or something. But anyway, you want to pass this on because, you know, instead of complaining, having people complain about, you know, about, you know, it being dangerous on the road. Maybe they should read this. So pass it on to them. You know, share it on your feed and let everybody take a look at this and see what you get for a reaction. I have not yet looked to see what I got, so we will find out. But I'm sure it will probably stir up a little bit. Anyway, on a positive side, the Connecticut Cycling Advancement Program in Middletown is having a swap meet this weekend. It is at the Veteran of Foreign Wars in West Hartford, Connecticut, 83 South Street, West Hartford, Connecticut. And they're, so anyway, it's a swap meet. It's a bicycle swap meet primarily, I think. But then again, who knows what we're going to see when we get there. I'm going to be there. And this is, you can find out more information about it by calling 860-295-4030. And so that is one on the positive side for cycling. And I have one other one, too, and that is the Friends of Mansfield Hollow State Park annual meeting features a friend of the show and a member of the Nearac Earth Cycling Club, Mike Nugent, who will be talking about mountain biking in Mansfield Hollow. So if you have interest to the cycling end of things, or if you have interest in Mansfield Hollow State Park, where we put on our, that's the cyclocross race place. And the cyclocross race is also one of the primary fundraisers for the Friends of Mansfield Hollow State Park. So anyway, that's this Friday, February 21st at 6 p.m. at the Buchanan Center at the Mansfield Public Library in Mansfield Center. It's a meet and greet at 6 p.m. Just hang out and schmooze and meet some new friends and talk about Mansfield Hollow. And then we'll have Mike on for about 15 or 20 minutes, and he will tell us all about mountain biking and all out and around Mansfield Hollow. He and his wife Jill spend a lot of time out there, and they're very, very strong followers of cycling and of this show, and also spending a lot of time down at Mansfield Hollow. So anyway, good solid mountain bike people. Anyway, so check that out. That's on the positive side. Also, the maintenance minute. Shout out to Chuck.
Chuck from Tolland.
Yeah, to Chuck from Tolland. I had the opportunity to meet Chuck earlier this week, and we talked a little bit, or maybe it was last week. It was last week, and we talked about the maintenance minute, and he said, "I can't believe you're still using that." Well, I am still using it because it was a great suggestion, Chuck. We really appreciate it. So if you're listening, shout out. Examining those pedals. Okay, this is kind of like one of those things on your bicycle that you rarely pay any attention to until it doesn't work. That would be if it were like a clipless pedal or even one with toe clips on it. But the pedal is kind of a critical part of your bike. And so my maintenance minute is going to be focusing on examining your pedals. If it's clipless pedal, it might be time for a little bit of lube on them. They do have a mechanism to them that will get clogged up with dirt and also can rust because, especially if you ride in the rain or if you're riding off-road, you'll find that those pedals, they take an awful lot of abuse, and they really stand up incredibly well considering the amount of exposure they get out there. But you need to take a really, really good look at them. A couple of things that I have found, and I found actually this one most recently on a bike that was not working well in the local spin room. And it was that the bolts loosen up and then you can't get clipped in, you can't get clipped out. Sometimes we have to detach people's feet from their shoe and then try to muscle the shoe out of the pedal. I've seen all sorts of things happen. But again, I found that the one that we were having the most trouble with at the local community center, it just had a bolt which had backed off, and it was a pivot point on the pedal itself, on the mechanism of the clipless pedal. So it just wasn't working. And just a simple Allen wrench on there and tightened it up and lined it back up and tightened it up, and it's working great again. But the other thing you might want to look at, maybe you don't have clipless pedals. Maybe you have toe clips and straps, and look at their condition. Are the straps frayed and are the clips still in good order? So the straps, they do eventually wear out. They will. There's a lot of friction and wear down there from the pushing and pulling on the pedals, so they could be frayed out and they could be about to break. And I go over all these things this time of year, especially because it is a time of year that those of us who are up in the northern sections of the country are not riding the bicycles as much outside, but we are getting very, very anxious to get back outside and ride our bicycles.
I went outside.
You did go outside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was cold and windy.
It was cold and windy, yeah. Which is what we get. We get cold and windy.
And there might be opportunities this weekend, but I don't think I'm going to make them.
Yeah.
I got stuff going on.
I got a lot of stuff going on this weekend. Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be a busy weekend. So, and then I have that hour and a half long class that I teach also. So, busy. So check your straps. Make sure they're not frayed. The classic place that they're frayed is right where, at the very end, where the buckle goes in underneath the actual pedal itself. And then where the strap comes out on the other side and the strap is running very close to the crank arm. And you'll find that they tend to fray there. And if they do, eventually they'll just break. And then you'll be kind of out riding without any kind of real connection to your bike like you normally would have. So check that out really closely. Also, make sure that the toe clips, the clips that are on the bike, are firmly attached to the pedals. There's a couple of screws there that you need to examine and make sure that they are tight and that the strap, that the toe clip isn't dancing around on the pedal at all. Make sure that it's lined up properly. And then while you're at it, when was the last time you removed your pedals from the cranks and inspected the lubrication of the threads where they attach to the crank? All right. And I have a little note here. It says, relay the clicking story. So the clicking story is I had this bicycle many, many years ago. It was a really nice old road bike, and it was a full Campy Nuovo Record equipped bike, very nice bike. And it was, you know, I was working in a bicycle shop at the time. So in every spare moment I would have, I was always, you know, fiddling and maintaining and making sure my bike was working right. But of course, a bike like that, you didn't have to do a whole lot with other than replace the tires and the chain and the freewheel every once in a while, because they're pretty solid. They're definitely real, real solid. But I got this clicking noise, and I could not find it. And I just pulled everything apart. It sounded like it was coming from the drivetrain, which is, you know, a lot of times most of your noises are going to be coming from that direction. Although you just never know. And I've seen some very, very strange things in my years of working on bikes. But anyway, I was getting this clicking and I couldn't figure out what was wrong. I had pulled apart the bottom bracket of the bike. Back in the old days of ball bearings inside the bottom bracket, which were, you know, like ball bearings, like loose balls, repacked everything, put it all back together again, couldn't figure out that either. You know, I made sure that the threads were secured and sealed really nicely on the bottom bracket cups, went through everything, still getting a click. And then I had this old timer come into the store, and he said, "So what's going on?" And I said, "I'm just really frustrated. My bike's making all this noise." He said, "Well, to check chain ring bolts." Yep, checked. I did that, pulled them out, put them back together again, lubed them, put them back together, did that, pulled the bottom bracket apart, put it back together again. He said, "How about your pedals?" And I said, "Well, actually, I pulled the pedals off of the spindles on the crank arms, and I rebuilt them and put them back on." He said, "You didn't take the pedals off the bike when you did that, did you?" I went, "No, I didn't need to, so I just, you know, slid it off, cleaned it all up, put it back together." He said, "Go grab a pedal wrench." So I went and I grabbed a pedal wrench, and he said, "Check and make sure that those pedals are tight inside your crank arms." I got barely a movement out of one of those pedals, but it was just enough, and it was not quite tight enough, and that was my click. So you just never know. I guess that the pedal was dancing in the threads on the crank arm. That's all it took. But after I did that, I went, you got to be kidding. And he goes, go ride the bike. I went outside. I rode the bike. I came back. And I went, you got to be kidding me. I can't believe that. He said, happened to me many years ago. And he said, I learned the same way you did. He said, I tried everything. But he said, that's what it came down to. So what I would encourage you to do is actually take the pedals off periodically. And, you know, just check the threads and clean them up really good and then put them back on. And when you put them back on, make sure you're using, of course, a good pedal wrench, which has some leverage on it, and secure it down real tight. And you want to check that. So that's my clicking story. And it's something that if you are having that problem and no one's been able to figure it out, that's a secret from Ron's vault right there. So anyway. We're going to move on here, and we're going to talk a little bit today about something that popped up about brain health and your bicycle. Brain health. So brains, Fran.
That's my cue.
Yeah, that's your cue. This is where I wanted you to hop in here. Mm. So this comes from, actually, it came across my Bicycling Magazine feed, and it was the benefits of different exercise intensities for your brain health. Mixing up tempos of your workouts can boost your mood, ability to process information, and capacity to pay attention. Shout out to Elizabeth Millard from Bicycling Magazine. This came out just a few days ago. And it's a new study that was published in the Journal of Brain Plasticity found that mixing up the tempos of your workouts, like adding a few sprints to your longer rides, for example, can lead to some big benefits for your brain. Adding both high and low intensity efforts into a workout can boost your mood ability to your ability to process information, to pay attention, and to regulate your emotions. The association between exercise and brain health is well established at this point, but the new research finds benefits differ depending on the intensity of the activity. So the translation here is putting together a mix of different intensities, adding a few sprints to your longer rides could help your workouts give your brain a bigger boost. So let's say you're out for a long ride and you think, you know, well, I'm just having a good day on my bike and this is really great. Pick a point up ahead. Pick a point like a mailbox or a telephone pole or a signpost or something, and just rev it up and you know, hop off the saddle, whatever you have to do to get the speed up, and then settle into it and do a sprint. Do a sprint. And the sprints don't have to be super long. I am not a big believer in much over 30 seconds because that's a pretty long sprint. And I find when I actually do sprints in my indoor cycling classes that seems to be the maxed out time period is 30 seconds. And that is just enough. And it really, really sets you off. It'll make you breathe super hard. It'll jack your heart rate way up. It'll really give you a huge boost. And yet also you'll find that you get a lot of fatigue from those sprints. But you want to just add a few of them in. That's all. It's not like you have to go out and just do sprints all day. It's not like you're going out and you're doing an interval workout. Just mix it up a little bit. Just mix it up. Maybe it's you and a friend of yours and you're a little competitive with one another and you want to, you know, do it with someone because that's always a lot more fun if you can talk somebody else into joining you and saying, hey, I'm going to that green mailbox up there. I'll say ready, set, go, and we'll just go and then just do it and just sprint it out. That's all. We have a particular favorite in our neighborhood, which was established many, many, many years ago. I give credit to Dave Geisert for that one. Shout out to Dave. And it is commonly known as the boat launch sprint. Others have given that credit to Jim Henry, but I believe it was Dave Geisert who started the whole thing. So anyway, and it's a downhill sprint, which is kind of fun because you can really wind it out and feel really important, a false sense of fitness, whatever it is. But anyway, it's a lot of fun. And you just, you know, when you get to that point in the road, you just go, oh, it's time to go because it's the boat launch sprint and you go. So anyway, add it into your longer rides. The study was published in the Journal of Brain Plasticity, and it took 25 male athletes who spent 30 minutes on a treadmill at low intensity and 30 minutes at high intensity on a separate day. Before and after each session, functional MRI scans, which measured the changes in blood flow that occurred during brain activity, were used to examine connectivity in brain regions linked to specific behavioral processes. Although both sessions showed an increase in positive mood, the low-intensity exercise showed more functional connectivity related to cognitive processing and attention, while the high-intensity workout lit up parts of the brain related to the emotional processes. So, anyway, Brain, what do you think about that? What do you think? I mean, obviously, we both like to ride our bikes, and we both feel a whole lot better once we get off our bike. It's saying that the different sessions had different results, which I was kind of interested
in. Right. So it's saying that the high intensity where you push really hard and then you back off. That was better for post-ride recovery. And let me see. I think it said that...
It said that the high intensity lit up parts of the brain related to emotional processes.
Right. So high intensity was good for emotional processing versus the low intensity was good for your cognition.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
So that's very interesting.
It is interesting.
So when people ride comfortably hard all the time, that's not good for you.
No, it's not.
No,
it's
because
not.
It keeps and you, because it doesn't. So here's the thing. When you're doing low intensity, so your cortisol isn't too high. So you're not pushing your, you don't need as much cortisol to do a low intensity workout. Also, when you're doing a low intensity, you're literally less stressed because you're not pushing yourself, and you can do things like look around. You could talk to your friend. You could actually look at the nature that you're riding past. You can say, "Oh my goodness, I always ride so fast on this road. Now that I'm riding slow, I see that there's a house there, and it's blue, and it has trees in front of it,
and
it has
that someone out funny in front saying, "Hi, how are you today?"
Exactly. But what's going on there is you're doing low intensity exercise, so it's helping to moderate cortisol. You're not in a super high cortisol state. At the same time, you're really improving your cardiovascular health. And so you're lowering stress, and that means that the improved cardiovascular, the cardiovascular that it's favoring is cognition. So you're getting good circulation to your brain in a low stress environment. And that leads to good quality thought. And so that's, you're going to be able to think more clearly. You're going to get circulation to your brain. You're going to be able to. So one of the things you're doing when you're doing low intensity exercise is you're improving circulation, and you're favoring improving circulation over how hard you can work.
Right.
You're not so much different. You get different health benefits from low intensity exercise versus high intensity exercise, and low intensity exercise favors fat burning at a lower level. It favors reducing cortisol so that your exercise, it is not depleting you as much, and it favors improving your cardiovascular system in general. So because your cardiovascular system is less stressed and yet it is still working, you're making more cardiovascular connections, you're making new capillaries, you're just you're creating better circulation everywhere. So, and that includes to your brain. If you have better circulation to your brain, you're going to be more able to think clearly. So if you're, trying to finish up your charting at 10 o'clock at night, you'll be more efficient at it if you do some low intensity exercise. Now, the high intensity exercise is different because you're pushing yourself as hard as you can, and you're interspersing that with completely backing off. Because that's when they talk about high intensity exercise, that's what they're talking about. They're talking about intervals. They're not talking about, a 30-mile time trial. That's pushing yourself very hard for 30 miles.
That's pretty high intensity.
They're also not talking about, you're getting on the, you know, you're getting on the Saturday ride and you're riding as hard and fast as you can at all times. That's not a high intensity workout because you can't, that's not sustainable. So you're going to sort of be working at that medium level. And that medium level, that is the level that makes you fat, makes you hungry, makes you slow. Mm-hmm. It actually makes you not as fast. You will be faster if you actually do intervals where you have parts of the workout where you're pushing yourself really hard and parts of the workout where you're totally chilling out. And that pushing yourself really hard is actually good for you. It does different things to you. And what it's saying is it's improving the emotional center of your brain. So one of the things that's different there is that these short bursts, there are things that happen physiologically that in short bursts that's different from what happens when you're doing low intensity. Right. So you're going to be increasing anabolic hormones. So like you're going to be increasing your androgens, your testosterone, possibly your estrogen. You're going to be increasing hormones that cause growth. So when you do high intensity interval training, you are actually increasing your insulin-like growth hormone, your mm-hmm. IGF, and you're also increasing growth hormone itself. So you're helping to build muscle. You're also doing bursts of high cortisol followed by deep rest. And so what that's going to do is that's going to set up your neurotransmitters. Because you're having bursts of neurotransmitters supporting this activity followed by a valley where they're not being used. And that helps your neurotransmitters to work better, and that's going to affect your mood.
Right, and cortisol is elevated in high-intensity exercise, but continued high levels can block neural responses.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. You're doing your Saturday ride where you're going as hard and fast as you possibly can for the whole ride. That's not that great for your fitness, and that's why you see people who do that a lot. They get chubby. Why are they chubby? Because they are in high cortisol all the time, and they're not getting a break from their cortisol.
Well, it's sort of like race day, and unfortunately, we see, and I have seen over the years, that a weekly bike ride where everyone shows up for it, which is supposed to be a social event, turns into a race event, which is the weekly race event. And I think the biggest problem is that if someone does go about it that way, that they don't take the next day and just go at an amazingly slow, chill pace.
Yeah,
so
I guess.
So they don't allow their bodies to recover from
it. Well, some people do and some people don't, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it just seems like it's kind of a common sense thing
but
to do.
That's something. So the thing is, if you have one day a week where you're riding like that, that's probably fine.
Right.
But if every time you go out and you go as hard and fast and far as you can,
right,
you're going to get slow.
Oh, I know that.
And fat.
I know that for a fact. Yes, I know. I totally.
That's why
interval training is
a good
definitely
thing.
The right thing to do.
That because you may be. I mean, because my thing is like I have one day a week where I have a longish ride, and the longish ride can be tough and it can be hard. It can have spaces in it where it's easy and spaces in it where we're going all out. But I only do that one day a week. And then I have two, in season when I'm outside, 2 days a week I do intervals. And mm-hmm. I do a short ride, maybe an hour, where I do intervals. I do hill repeats and or sprints. And just 2 days a week of that. And then if I ride any more than that, I go easy, easy, easy.
Well, you know what the Mayo Clinic says?
What?
If your cortisol levels get and stay too high, it could put you at risk for health issues such as weight gain. No brainer.
Right.
Heart disease, digestive problems, headaches, and trouble remembering or concentrating.
Yeah.
That's from the Mayo.
If you're in high cortisol,
that's from
like,
the Mayo Clinic.
Well, that's like being because you're stressed all the time. And one of the things that happens if you spend too much time in high cortisol, your cortisol receptors are going to start being less responsive. So you're actually going to have some cortisol resistance. And that's one of the things that will make you slow. The other thing is, if you can't, if you're in high cortisol all the time, one of cortisol's jobs is to put sugar into your blood so that you can run away from the bear or do the sprint or whatever it is. If you're spending all your time in high cortisol, that cortisol is going to keep cortisol, what it does is it looks around and it finds tissue to break down so it can put sugar into your blood. It might use some fat, but it will also use bone. It will use muscle. It will use anything it can find that it's going by and break it down and turn it into sugar so that you can run away from the bear. And if you're spending every time you go out in high cortisol for the whole ride, you're eventually going to wear yourself down. You're not going to build muscle mass, and you're going to gain weight because you're putting sugar into your blood. The sugar that your body does not use, that can't make it into your cells, your insulin rises and it looks at goes, hey, sugar, hey, aren't you going to go into the cells? All right. And they're like, we're going to talk about Charlie again.
Right.
Yep. Charlie, got to get the sugar into the cells. Well, buddy, I can't get it in. There's no room. All right, let's take some of the sugar. Let's put it downstairs in the fridge, in the liver, so it turn it into glycogen, put it in the fridge. Hey, Charlie, the fridge is full. We can't fit any more sugar in here. You can't, it's all full up with glycogen. All right, so what do you want me to do with this? Well, you know, you have unlimited storage in all those fat cells. What are you going to do with all those fat cells? Yeah, but I'm going to make this guy fat. Look, we got no room. We got no room in the cells. We got no room in the fridge. That's where you got to put it. You can't leave it in the blood. He's going to have high triglycerides. I know. He already has high triglycerides. Well, that's no good. So put it in the fat cells. That's all you could do. All right. So now the insulin's going to go into the fat cells and it's going to be stored. Mm. So if you spend a lot of time in high cortisol, whether you're sitting at a desk typing on a computer or you're doing every single bike ride you do at this moderately high intensity, you're what you call comfortably hard, and that's all you do, you get fat.
Yeah, you can't.
You get
do that.
Fat, and you also are at risk for osteoporosis, and you will lose muscle mass. And the worst thing of all, you'll get slower.
Yeah, that's a big one. That's a big one. And a lot of people are completely unaware of that. They think if I just ride faster, I'll get faster.
What's the most important part of training?
Doing it.
No. No. Actually, it's the opposite.
Rest.
Yes.
Right. Rest. Yeah.
So when you do your high intensity intervals, you want to go up the hill, then you want to go down it. And when you go down it, your heart rate should get down to, you know, your zone one or two before you even attempt to climb the hill again. You know, and if you're ready to do your repeat again and your heart rate isn't down yet, you should do a little circles around until it gets down. And remember that if you allow yourself adequate rest before attempting a new interval, you will get stronger. Sometimes I find in extreme spin class, you know, I was off my bike for a week and a half, which gave me a really good rest, I must say. And I did feel good getting back on it. But I must say, one of the things that's been happening since I got back on is I notice my heart rate is creeping up, and that you'll be doing these intervals and, you know, you're supposed to go back to comfortably hard. My heart rate isn't going back to my threshold.
Sure.
I'm not completely recovered.
Yep.
And I'm like, all right, so do I do the workout as presented, or do I wait for my heart rate to completely recover? And sometimes I do. Sometimes I just, you're like, all right, we're get back to completely hard, and I don't go there. I just wait until my heart rate gets into zone
that's
two.
That's probably the wiser way of doing it. The reason that when you're teaching an indoor class like that,
we're
limited as to how much time we can spend, and people are coming there to get a workout, so they're gonna end up pushing themselves. But I make adjustments, is what I do. I adjust the level of my bike,
the time, and the time of rest. Also,
and I did. I made some on the fly adjustments in the class the other day because it was obvious. I mean, I can look around the class and I can see people's faces, and you're of course very verbal with me about it.
I'm like, just so you know, I'm not recovered yet.
Yeah,
and the thing is, one of the things that you worry about, I know, is that people are going to get bored.
I don't want them to get bored,
and you should stop worrying about that because it's more important that they get a workout that's effective than they get. If they're bored, too bad. And I can't imagine if they are bored, they're not doing the workout as presented.
I agree with
you. I do not get bored in your class because I'm working so hard. Yeah. And when the rest interval goes longer, I am not bored. I'm like, oh, thank God, it's going to go a little bit longer. because I know that if I get more rest, I'm going to be able to perform better on the next interval. And that's right. The thing. If you're on the road doing intervals and say you climb that really big hill and now your heart rate, you're in zone 4 or 5, and then you go down the hill and you get to the bottom of the hill and your heart rate, you're still in zone 3, don't go up the hill. Just wait. If you have a...
Give it a few more minutes, whatever it takes. Just, you know, go wind the legs out, ride back down the road the other way, whatever it takes. You know, just chill it out.
Because the point, if you want to
you're not going to get the maximum work out of your effort if you are not recovered.
And you're looking for very specific benefits. The benefits you're working for are, you get some real goodies. We just talked about how if you do this high-intensity interval, it adjusts your neurotransmitters so that you have better mood. If you have better mood, you are going to perform better, equals you're going to be faster, okay? So if you... So mood will affect how you perform. If you're happier, you're going to perform better. All right. So you're looking for that. You're looking for the increase in IGF-1, your insulin-like growth factor. That's going to help you to build muscle mass. You have better muscle mass. You're going to be stronger. If you have more muscle mass, you don't have to use your cardio as much. You're going to be more efficient. You're looking for nice hormones. You're looking for testosterone and other androgens, which make you feel powerful and aggressive and good. They give you a sense of well-being and DHEA. So you're actually looking to make more of specific hormones. If you have more muscle mass, you will make more androgens, whether you're male or female, doesn't matter. Those hormones give you a sense of well-being and they help you with muscle growth and they help you to perform better. So you're not going to get those goodies unless you push yourself really hard, but have adequate rest in between the intervals.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
The other thing about adequate rest between the intervals means if you just did intervals on Tuesday, do something else or something very easy on Wednesday.
Right.
Because, and it's not that you're being lazy, you're not. You're actually promoting the benefits.
Right.
I'm going to throw in a couple of, I'm going to just shout something. I'm going to present something right now.
Okay.
Which is that... I have been taking some nice amino acids. I'm working on my blood pressure, and right. I'm one of these unicorns that I work out very regularly, and I have high blood pressure. It's lousy.
You're not alone. I've known a few people like that.
It's genetic.
It happens.
Yeah, and so I have to work on how to get my blood pressure down. Anyway, there are some lovely amino acids that can help to lower your blood pressure. And what I've discovered is instead of putting them in a drink, I like to put them in applesauce. So I get some nice organic applesauce with unsweetened applesauce, which tastes good. And then I dump a bunch of cinnamon in it, which makes so I don't have to get cinnamon applesauce because I get real cinnamon and I dump it in. It's
right.
Delicious.
Right.
All right. If I wanted, I'd put some cocoa powder in it too, or cocoa whey protein. That might be nice too. And then it would be yummy. Then I go ahead and I put several amino acids in. One of the amino acids that's my new friend is glycine. So I get straight up glycine, which tastes a little bit sweet. And, you know, your dose is going to vary, but glycine, if you're having trouble with cramping, like cramping on your bike, in the bed, after the bike, off the bike, whenever you're having trouble with cramping, glycine is your friend. Glycine helps with detoxification and it's also calming and it makes you feel cheery and it helps you sleep better. So, and it is athlete's friend for sure. So if you're having trouble sleeping because you rile yourself up too much in terms of, you know, some people when they work out a lot, they have trouble calming down. Glycine can help with that. So I put a bunch of glycine in my applesauce. For sleep, you're looking at 3 to 5 grams, but it's going to vary based on the person. So glycine is one of them. Another fun one is L-citrulline. So citrulline, the cool thing about L-citrulline is it can be converted to arginine, and apparently you can raise your arginine better by taking citrulline than by taking arginine. Now, L-citrulline, here's a really super fun way to get L-citrulline. In season, eat a bunch of watermelon. So I'm going to be watermelon goddess when the watermelon comes out. And when it's not in season, there's this delicious drink you can buy called watermelon water. And it's super good. And that's a way to get citrulline in. You can also get citrulline powder or capsules. Mm. Anyway, so I'm putting a bunch of citrulline into my applesauce as well. So, and the reason I do L-citrulline is because it's a nitric oxide enhancer. So glycine, I don't know if glycine is going to, think actually that's not true. Glycine does also help your workout because it helps you to store glycogen better. And if you have better glycogen stores, there it's going to feed your workout better.
Sure.
Citrulline, because it helps you to make arginine. Arginine is a nitric oxide enhancer and helps to open up the blood vessels so that you have better circulation. And nitric oxide enhancers will enhance a workout. That's why you have beet juice. And people do beet juice or powder before their workouts. And it's a nitric oxide enhancer.
Right.
Opens up the blood vessels.
Sure.
So I got that going. And by the way, anything that enhances nitric oxide is going to help you lower your blood pressure. Glycine calms you down, helps to lower your blood pressure. So the third lovely amino acid that I throw in there is taurine. So taurine is in, you know, your Red Bull and stuff like that. But there's some other scary things in Red Bull that make me not ever want to. You know that hockey player that passed out with had the heart thing? He was a young guy and he had a heart thing and he had to have a defibrillator placed. It was in the news.
Oh, okay. No,
I thought to myself, I wonder how much Red Bull he had that day.
Oh, maybe.
Right. Because so taurine is in Red Bull, but I don't do taurine with Red Bull, but taurine by itself. Taurine is actually very calming. And taurine is, all of these amino acids are not essential amino acids. You can make them, but your body doesn't do a great job of making them and you can get depleted in them. So you have to eat them to an extent. So anyway, taurine is a lovely membrane stabilizer. It's also calming. It helps to lower blood pressure and it has been studied to improve exercise performance. So I have my power applesauce, taurine, citrulline, and glycine. So because, you know, I have hidden herpes simplex 1. Well, I'm not sure. Yeah, I have herpes simplex 1. So I'm a little concerned because I'm increasing my arginine. Plus, I also eat nuts. And nuts have plenty of arginine in them. I get concerned I could get an outbreak. So arginine, if you have too much arginine, if your arginine versus lysine ratio gets too high, you can be more likely to have a herpes outbreak. So I make sure to also take lysine. And I don't know if I want to put lysine. Lysine, I'm just going to take pills. I'm not going to put it in the applesauce. But lysine, if you have a higher lysine to arginine ratio, you're going to be less likely to get herpes outbreaks. So if you start messing around with arginine and you have herpes or cold sores, you want to make sure you're also taking lysine.
So
lysine is not glycine. They're different.
If you need to know anything about enhancing your workouts or your health levels, Fran is definitely the source.
I know things.
She knows things. She really does. She knows things. She's very interesting. And great, great riding partner, too. Great person to go out and ride with because she'll just talk the whole time and you'll learn a lot while you're out riding. Hopefully. If you want to. So the high-low strategy, that's what they call this, the high-low strategy, also has a potential for improving your recovery.
Right. That makes sense.
Right. So there was another study of cyclists, and it was done by East Carolina University, I think, is what I saw of their kinesiology department. And it found that variable high-intensity exercise, which was a series of bike sprints interspersed with low-intensity moments, was significantly better for post-ride recovery than doing moderate-intensity exercise for the same amount of time. So it actually helps you recover better, too.
Yeah.
So this high-low thing is a good thing. It's definitely a good thing. It starts with the brain, and then it does all sorts of other stuff for your body, too, which is really good. So so if you think about it, consider it a favor, this both favors your brain and your body to get the high-low activity in your training. So if you're looking to do some training and pay a little bit more attention to what you're getting out of your bicycle ride, then this is definitely a thing that would help you. But anyway, I thought it was a good thing to bring up. There's also, there's other things that, people, the 7 mental health benefits of cycling. I have a little list here. Reduces stress. That's obvious. We know that. Definitely reduces stress. Not only has it been proven that cardiovascular exercise helps you reduce stress and ease anxiety, but cycling in particular has been said to benefit the rider's overall state of mind. Reduces risk of depression. Sheer enjoyment of riding a bike can be enough to ease the mind of some of its demons and reduce the risk of depression and mental illness. Another good thing. Number 3, helps you sleep better. Riders are able to get their Curcadin, is that right? circadian rhythm in sync by riding regularly. In addition, cycling can help reduce levels of cortisol in the body, which we just talked about, stress hormone, which may block regenerative deep sleep. It can also positively affect brain serotonin,
yeah,
which can improve your sleep cycles.
And that's one of the things we're talking about with the high-intensity intervals. It's probably going to be more likely those high-intensity intervals that are going to improve the serotonin versus the low-intensity exercise.
Well, my friend Michael, whenever I teach a very, very intense class, he looks over at me and says, "I'm going to name my nap after you this afternoon." So it definitely helps you with your sleep. Improves your memory. And as you get older, it's often difficult to maintain a sharp memory. Riding a bike helps build new brain cells. That's a good
in the hippocampus.
Right.
Yeah.
It's the region of the brain responsible for your memory.
Right.
Number five, helps you feel good. Well, no kidding. It's like when I get on my bike, the world is right. Everything is right. People who choose to ride to cycle instead of drive gain a sense of pride by helping save the environment, reducing your carbon footprint, avoiding adding the world's population, does a wonder and making you feel good about yourself. Cyclists enjoy the benefits of a cycling high, similar to the runner's high. Cyclists often note that the endorphins that come from the physical exercise of riding a bike make them feel happy. It's a good thing. Why do you ride your bike so much? Because I like being happy. I like it a lot. Improves your creative thinking. There you go. All kinds of artists and musicians take a bike ride when they are suffering a mental block. The ability to exercise while getting fresh air helps to sharpen problem-solving skills as well as creativity. Avid cyclists note that they have an addiction to riding. This positive addiction is a great way to refocus your mind's energy in a positive place. This brings out the talk recently, or over the last probably 5 years or so, where you know what is getting replaced in the corporate world is golf is being replaced in the corporate world, and it's being replaced by cycling. So instead of going out and spending 3 hours on the golf course, the executives are going out and they're spending 3 hours on the
bikes.
Yeah,
like we saw on that show, Shrill.
Yeah.
That rotten guy took his staff on a bike ride.
No, that's beside the point. Anyway, that was different. Anyway,
it was good that he took everybody out on a bike ride. It was bad that he...
Fran is referring to a TV show that maybe most of you have not seen. So anyway,
yes,
I'll just point that out. And it also helps boost productivity. Recent studies suggested that employees who ride their bike to work are more productive. Hello, employers. Put a shower in, put a locker room in, put a bike locker in for your people who want to ride their bikes to work. You're going to get more out of them. So you will get that money back. It definitely is going to be a return to you. So in addition, a quick afternoon bike ride can boost your energy levels and help you have a more productive evening. Cycling is a great sport for many reasons. Giving your mind that extra boost of positivity is important for your overall happiness. The psychological and mental advantages of riding a bike regularly are something that really helps maintain cheerfulness in our daily lives. So, anyway, more things about why it's good to ride a bike. We talk about this all the time. But it's good. It's all good stuff. So the next thing, I have a couple of friends that are dealing with lower back problems. And so there's, I thought it would be good to bring up we got a few minutes here that we can talk about this, about lower back pain causes and prevention for cyclists. So this is from Cycling Weekly, a British magazine, online magazine. Lower back pain, compared to many sports, cycling is one with relatively low injury rates, crashes and collisions apart, but riders do need to take care of their backs. So this mentions cycling and lower pain. Given how hard your legs work on a bike, it's natural to assume that when an overuse injury strikes, it's your knees that will be most vulnerable. Surprisingly, however, researchers have found that it's not the biggest culprit. It's lower back pain. So Norwegian scientists investigated 116 professional road cyclists and looked at types of overuse injuries suffered over the previous year. Some startling facts emerged. 94% of the cyclists had suffered some kind of overuse injury during that period. And here we go as we delve deeper into this. 45% of the injuries were the lower back. 23% of the injuries were to the knees. 58% of the cyclists had experienced low back pain in previous 12 months, and 41% of all cyclists have sought some sort of medical attention for back pain. So back pain is a thing. So what do you do about it? Don't blame your bike. Well, anyway, correct bike setup is crucial for back health, and it's definitely something that we can talk about. But what else could be going on? The big thing is your hamstrings and your hip flexors and all that connected part, all the connected parts. If you explore from your lower back and then drop down and go through your glutes and all the way around, and it's just your hip flexors, especially if you are someone who is seated most of the day, like at work all day long, or you're spending an awful lot of time sitting on your bike seat, your hip flexors are going to get shorter and shorter and shorter and shorter, and then that is going to run into a back problem. So you really have to work on that. And I know one of my friends who had a big time back scare recently. He is doing more stretching than he's ever done in his entire life, and he said it's unbelievable. It's made a huge difference. He's doing yoga. He's doing a lot of stretching, a lot of physical therapy, and it really has made a big difference. So we can also look at impaired spinal movement. Another study looked at the effects of holding static bent forward flexion position on the all important back extensor muscles that help maintain correct posture and stability in the lower back. Found that prolonged periods of static flexion when a cyclist is on the drops, these muscles became less effective at generating the forces required to maintain spinal stability and posture.
Right.
So if you're one of those people who figures that I can go faster if I just get my stem down lower and I can drop down, you're going to go slower, not faster. Yes, you will be able to momentarily hold a position that is really good aerodynamically, and it may even show when you get onto the power meter that you're getting the most wattage out of that position, but you can't hold it forever. And that's where, and when you get to the point where you start getting a lot of fatigue, you're not going to be getting the same watts out of that. So you have to be very careful. There's a fine line there that you need to pay attention to. Big thing, I'm just going to kind of scan over this because we are running down on time here. Core strength. Can't even tell you. It's important. Being able to hold yourself in the position on the bike that is most efficient is done by your core. That's really what it's all about. Fran is such a dedicated core person. I've not seen anyone who is as dedicated as she is for You do a lot of core.
Well, what I do is I have a core sequence that I do, and it takes me about just over 15 minutes to do. And 2 days a week, I do a short strength training workout, and half of it is that core workout. And then, especially this time of year, I will throw in the core workout on spin class day. On Tuesdays and Thursdays, I do that core workout as well. I do this neat thing where I do oval crunches on a ball, where I lay down on the stability ball, and I make my body go in, and instead of going up and down, I make my body go in an oval. I do that. I do bridges. I bring my heels really close to my butt, and I do breathing bridges where I go up and down. I get prone on the stability ball, and I lift both legs at the same time. That works my glutes. And then I do dead bug. I'm going to ask you to look up dead bug
we'll look it up afterwards. We're running out of time.
And then I do planks, front planks and side planks.
Right.
And I do all of those.
There's actually three different things that they have listed here: the founder, the woodpecker, and the plank. And maybe we can talk about these a little bit more next week when we come on. And we can talk a little bit more about core and the importance of core for your bicycle. I think that's a good thing. We'll bring that up on our next episode.
Yeah.
So
And the other thing we should talk about is physical medicine, body maintenance.
Right.
So I can speak to that.
Right. Well, I brought that up in my maintenance minute of a few weeks back when we talked about the maintenance minute. We said maintain your body. Right.
Yeah.
But there's certainly we could spend a lot of time on that. So we'll talk a little bit more about we'll talk a little bit more about core work and back pain a little bit more on the next episode. So stay tuned and we will talk a little bit more about what we can do there to help you out with your back pain if you're experiencing it, or maybe a way to prevent it from happening. Events, I mentioned it earlier, the Friends of Mansfield Hollow annual meeting featuring a friend of the show and member of NERAC Earth Cycling Club, Mike Nugent. Shout out to Mike, who's going to be talking about mountain biking at Mansfield Hollow this Friday, February 21st at 6 p.m. at the Buchanan Center at Mansfield Public Library in Mansfield Center. It is free for anyone to attend. And then we have another event coming up the following day, which is Saturday, February 22nd, in West Hartford, Connecticut, at the Veterans of Foreign, VFW. That's 83 South Street, West Hartford, Connecticut, is the CCAP Winter Swap Meet and Tag Sale. So if you're a bicycle person and you want to go to a swap meet and maybe get some, you know, some specials on some items that are cycling oriented, I will be there for sure. I'm definitely bringing a number of boxes of things and trying to get rid of a few things. So it's a good thing, and it benefits the Central Connecticut cycling people, the CCAP people. So that's a good thing. If you need more information about that, 860-295-4030. It's 83 South Street, West Hartford, Connecticut. And I believe it is from 10 to 2 or 9 to 2. I can't remember exactly, but they'll give you more information about that. You can also find out more about it at bikereg.com. On March 15th through the 17th, Safe Streets for Everyone, the 21st Annual National Bike Summit in Arlington, Virginia and Washington, D.C. More information can be found at the bikeleague.org/summit. Ninth Annual Thread City Cyclers Century Ride, July 26, 2020. Come explore the roads that Pedal and Run and Fran ride on. Yeah, so that's coming up. We've also got Steeplechase coming up. Got a lot of things coming up in the future here. So lots and lots of exciting things in cycling right here at Bicycle Talk. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. My name is Pedalin' Ron, and you have been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you've been listening to this live or on podcast and you'd like to comment, send me an email, bicycletalk1@gmail.com. And you can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, or now on Spotify. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show or be on the show as a guest, just send me an email, bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is Pedalin' Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS, Storrs.